You are listening to the Fit Mom Podcast, hosted by myself, Ash Iovino, and my co-host, Marisa Tully.
Here we celebrate the unfiltered phases of motherhood.
On this podcast, no topics are too taboo, from menstrual cycle to menopause, weight loss, hormones, you name it.
We are here to share real stories, dumb down the science, and motivate you. So if you're ready to embrace a sustainable, healthier, and more balanced life, then welcome to your new community. Okay, should we get into it? It's a very casual conversation. I know these types of conversation when it comes to prenatal nutrition, we can go on for hours. But we'll just start getting into it and see where the conversation goes. And what's amazing is, I mean, we've both just been, you've just been through pregnancy. I'm still going through this third trimester entering it. So I think it's going to be interesting to also hear a little take on how we personally experience the nutrition when it comes to prenatal.
Definitely. But everything changes a bit once you fall pregnant, hey?
Yeah, everything changes. So to start off, if you can maybe just give our listeners a little bit of an introduction. To your profession and what you specialize in.
Perfect. So my background, I suppose, has always been science. I have a Bachelor of Science from the University of Victoria in Canada, which is where I'm originally from. But I did my postgrad degree and my master's degree in nutrition and dietetics at UCT. So this is sort of where I'm based, and nutrition is very much my focus. And sort of sub-niched into that, I qualified in prenatal nutrition and fertility nutrition and certified in those two areas. And that is actually primarily where I focus. So when I work one-on-one with clients and even in the research work that I do, I'm still quite involved with UCT, University of Cape Town. And it seems like a coincidence, but basically most of the projects I'm involved in have to do with the first 1,000 days, which is the period of time from preconception until baby's about two. And it's this incredible window of opportunity to like really set the foundations for baby's lifelong health. So my research focus and my private practice focus happens to kind of marry into each other. And that's the space I love working in because I feel like it makes the biggest impact.
That's amazing. So basically, starting off, there's a hell of a lot that we as mothers can do in terms of determining or influencing our kids' health.
Absolutely. Moms and dads. So this is something when I'm working with fertility clients, it's so often mom who feels like it's the onus is on her and it's all about mom's health and mom's body. But actually in the preconception space, dad is just as important. You know, the time that sperm is maturing as well as the time that eggs are maturing, this is when they're really, really sensitive to these diet and lifestyle factors. And sperm cells are just as sensitive as maturing egg cells. So moms and dads, certainly in the preconception part of it. Once we get into pregnancy, obviously dad doesn't have as much of an impact. He's played his part, you know, officially. Other than supporting mom, pregnancy very much then becomes sort of what's mom consuming and is she looking after herself, that kind of thing. But preconception, I always like to include dads because they're half the equation.
Yeah, that's huge. That's so, so big. I remember when we were going through the just before preconception phase, I was listening to a lot of podcasts and went into this like wellness research into and discovered so many things that I had no idea, no idea that you can, and it's recommended to take, for instance, prenatal vitamins before even starting to conceive, all these sorts of things that I never actually considered. And then when sort of listening to podcasts and yang about the male input, if I just have to look at my friendship group, like the males, they carry on with their lives, especially in the preconception phase. And so many of my friends are like stopping to drink alcohol or caffeine and they just carry on alcohol, whatever it may be, with their lifestyles.
Totally. That's really common. Even though we're learning more that the male side of the equation is really important, it still seems to be that generally the responsibility falls on the female partner. But it does make a difference. We're seeing, and it makes sense, right? They're contributing 50% of the genetic material to this unborn babe. So, and we know now that spermatogenesis, which is this when sperm are maturing, that's a 74-day cycle. So about 3 months before you conceive, before sperm meets the egg, is when that sperm is maturing and the egg is maturing, and that's when it's sensitive to that input. So it does make a difference. And we're seeing in research, you know, dad's weight, dad's level of physical activity, saturated fat content is really coming into sort of the dietary roles of how it affects sperm, alcohol intake, that kind of thing. It just affects the health of the sperm that eventually hopefully creates a healthy embryo.
Yes, that makes complete sense. It's interesting that there's not much information about that. I know we are evolving, but it will be interesting to see how it evolves even further, especially on the male take. But on the female side of things, when it comes to the different trimesters, what sort of nutrients are particularly crucial, and does it differ quite a bit from first trimester to third trimester?
It does a little bit. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you want to be having a healthy, balanced diet throughout your whole pregnancy. But basically, there's different body systems developing in baby, and your body's doing different things in each trimester. So I'm sure most of our listeners are probably familiar with folate or folic acid, and that's something that is very, very well known and kind of a generalized supplement that most women actually take across the globe now, because we've learned that it's so important in closing the neural tube. So basically neurodevelopment in babe. And if this neural tube doesn't close, it either leads to issues when baby arrives or unfortunately sometimes miscarriage. So we learned that kind of the hard way, that folate, which is the natural form, is really necessary for this process to happen. Folic acid is the supplemental form. And basically now, just to mitigate that, most women know that we need to likely take additional folic acid supplements during preconception, ideally, and certainly in that first trimester, to help with that neural tube to close. So that's the first nutrient that I think most of us kind of know about, that's really important in the first trimester. But lots goes on in that first trimester. So the other two nutrients that I always kind of focus on with moms is iodine. And iodine is something that if you have a thyroid condition, you might know a little bit about iodine. But basically iodine is really important for baby's brain development, and it's included in many of our prenatals, but just double check that yours does have it. Because not all prenatal vitamins are created equal. And it is something we can get from our diet. And it's actually another one of those nutrients that was flagged sort of almost worldwide through research and through understanding what's our populations are eating, that there was almost, I wouldn't say global deficiency, but deficiency was so common that many countries now iodate, so they add in or they fortify. Most countries chose table salt as their fortification food, because most of us enjoy or use salt in our cooking in our day to day. So iodated table salt. Super simple, not expensive, you know, very accessible, helps meet our iodine requirement. So if it's not in your prenatal, I'm not suggesting by any means to add salt to everything. But if you do use salt in your cooking, rather choose the iodated form, because that will help you meet your iodine requirement. I don't know if you had any salt preferences in your pregnancy so far.
Well, I remember you when I had a consultation with you, I remember this was one of the recommendations, and because I think Himalayan salt doesn't have it, right? And that's like our go to in the kitchen. So I remember that. And also I know there's a lot of nutrients that in your first trimester, of course, you can benefit from, but it's so hard, and we've spoken about this before, when you can't stomach certain things. And I didn't even have the worst of the nausea that you can have. I didn't actually ever like throw up at any stage, but my nausea was like this hungover feeling that just lingered. And I just wanted to eat everything that was sugar, carbs, and cheese. So hard to get in those nutrients then.
It really can be. And that's another reason why I think the preconception part of the equation is so important, because you know you've set your body up and you're not deficient in anything going into that first trimester. Because as I'm sure you felt, and I think many women do, pregnancy is a really important time to eat well. Like, if you haven't thought about your nutrition before, often pregnancy is a time where you all of a sudden you really do put a lot of sort of thought and effort into it. And unfortunately, although it's a really important time to eat well, it can be challenging. If you're dealing with all those side effects, it's really, really hard to eat the way you want to eat. So the preconception journey or preconception part of sort of the road to pregnancy is really important, as are your sort of prenatal vitamins that I see as kind of an insurance policy. Like, if the wheels fall off the bus, at least you've got your prenatal with the basics in there. But yeah, it can be really hard. And sometimes you're craving things that, you know, don't necessarily include what you're hoping for. Maybe you're not craving green leafy veg. Probably not. And that's where you go. So the other good news about a lot of these nutrients is they're not in just one food. So I mentioned salt because it's the simplest thing, but iodine's also in dairy. It's also in seafood. It's also in actually mostly sea products. So seaweed as well, if you're eating, you know, nori or any fish. So it's not, most nutrients are kind of found across different food groups. So as long as you can try your best to eat as a diverse diet as possible, hopefully you're getting in what you can. But yeah, it can be hard. I hear you on that.
It can be. And also, I'm so glad that you're giving me so much, I have so much more peace of mind reflecting back on my first trimester and the things I was putting in my body, knowing that my preconception had such a massive part. Like, you do know, okay, yes, it's important for being able to fall pregnant and to try and prevent a miscarriage. But now if I look back, my preconception stage, it was so much easier to be healthier, of course, because you don't have the symptoms. So now just reflecting back, I had a period of no alcohol, no caffeine, had amazing nourish bowl dinners, really a lot of veg and fruit. And that was my preconception journey. And I actually haven't really reflected back on what I did right there.
Absolutely. So not only did it set you up to fall pregnant and you know, the eggs that were maturing at that stage that have ended up being this beautiful little baby inside are, you know, coming from a really, really, really healthy sort of baseline. You almost built up your stores in some way. So you weren't going into pregnancy deficient in anything, or, you know, your body wasn't struggling with anything. So I always feel that it's kind of the time you want to be healthiest is when you are trying to bring new life into the world, which makes sense because your body has to really go through a lot and do a lot. So it needs all the support and nutrients that you possibly can kind of line it up with. So it's very much a part of the whole picture. And yeah, it's nice to know when you've made that effort in the preconception space, if you do struggle with those symptoms, at least you have a little bit of kind of reassurance that your body has some stores of some of those nutrients.
Yeah, completely. And what other, are there any other nutrients that you highly recommend within that first period?
So the final one that I harp on quite a bit about is choline. And you'll sort of hear about it. It's included in most multivitamins in North America, for example, already. South African prenatal vitamins don't yet include them. I'm not sure if your audience is global or if it's mostly South African. But basically, choline is quite important for baby's nervous system development. My feeling is it's kind of like the next folate. We're really learning how important it is. And it's something that most of the population is not getting enough of. The simplest place to get it is actually the yolk of eggs. So consuming eggs regularly is something that I really recommend or encourage women in the preconception space and also definitely throughout pregnancy, just to make sure they're getting the choline that they need. But it's often something that I would add on as a supplement because it's not often included in those prenatal multis. So I would say first trimester, folate, iodine, choline. Those are the three main ones. And that's to help the neural tube close. It's to help a baby's brain development. And it's their nervous system development. There's so much happening in that first trimester. And those nutrients really, really play quite a big role.
Awesome. On the egg front, because that's actually something that even throughout my nausea period, I was able to stomach and really crave, like having scrambled eggs and sourdough for breakfast. Is there a point where you're eating too much in terms of cholesterol or anything else along those lines?
So that's a great question. And it's like the funny, not funny nutrition enigma. We keep finding out that it's good for you, it's not good for you, it's cholesterol is too high, et cetera, et cetera. The take-home message at the moment from what we're seeing in the research, there is cholesterol in egg yolks, which is what everyone's worried about. What we're understanding is that dietary cholesterol isn't impacting our blood level cholesterol quite the same way. And in terms of eggs, the benefits of the choline and all the other nutrients, B vitamins, et cetera, completely outweigh the worries about cholesterol. So, you know, cholesterol, we would worry about things if you were also consuming a lot of full cream, cheeses, yogurts, dairy, and also a lot of butter and even coconut oil, things that have a lot of natural sort of the saturated fats and the kind of unhealthy fats. But the benefits of eggs are so high in terms of the choline content that pregnancy clients of mine, I suggest if you're happy to eat them, enjoy them every day. But if you can, at least 3 to 4 times a week.
Okay, that's great. That's great to know.
Yeah, don't be afraid of eggs. They're amazing, especially during pregnancy.
And then when it comes to, I know you get asked this question a hell of a lot, but any tips that actually work for nausea?
Okay, so there's a few that are really basic. And really, really sort of maybe common sense, but not so much common sense. So I suppose the first thing to understand is that nausea is generally related to your HCG levels. And these are the levels that they're picking up when you are doing your pregnancy test at home, also when you do your blood work. And basically the other encouraging thing that I try to share, but doesn't always tend to be true, which I think with your case wasn't the case, but basically they usually peak at about 8 or 9 weeks pregnancy. So that's why often by the second trimester, once you're into your 12th or 13th week, the nausea sometimes does sort of dissipate. Did that happen for you or not?
It did massively. I actually had like a cutoff. It's so funny that fear of the unknown and fear of what other friends have experienced, you just anticipate that the worst is going to happen to you too. But I literally at 11 weeks already, I was starting to feel better. And in the back of my head, I have this like little voice going like, don't enjoy too much. It might still come back. You know, this fear of you might still get it just because you're almost out of the first trimester. I've known friends who've had it up in their entire pregnancies. So no, I was fortunate in that.
No, that does happen. It absolutely happens, especially if you think about twin pregnancies, for example, your HCG levels are higher. So often women carrying twins or triplets struggle with nausea even more than a singleton pregnancy. So the simple tips are, and many, many of us, I think, are doing this already, but taking your prenatal multivitamin on an empty stomach exacerbates the nausea. So if that's something you're doing, first thing is to make sure you eat before you take your prenatal multi. This is something that I always share with clients, but now I totally understand it. Don't let yourself get hungry. So basically an empty stomach kind of exacerbates that feeling of nausea. And so what I found I did and what I encourage clients to do is to actually eat even before you get out of bed. I had like an apple on my bedside table or some crackers, just something that my tummy had something in it before I even, you know, stood up for the day, because as soon as a little bit of hunger kicked in. Basically, some women don't experience hunger anymore. They go from feeling totally fine to nauseous. And the only way to fix it, but sometimes it's too late, is to try and eat something. So eating regularly and not allowing yourself to get hungry, so small, frequent meals, really helps to manage nausea. And I think it sounds like you crave carbs. Is that right?
Yeah. All I wanted was carbs. And I actually felt, for lack of a better word, I felt pretty gross throughout my whole first trimester, even going into 4 months, because I got into this habit of consistently eating and never had hunger. I was actually like full the whole time, and then the full and the nausea. I was overeating. It was definitely more emotional than anything else.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's a tricky balance. It really is. But to try and make sure, I find missing meals really, really exacerbates it. So the other thing is, so carbs is very common to crave. So it's just something to get into your tummy quickly and your body can absorb it quickly. But to kind of keep you fuller for just that little bit longer, having a bit of protein. So you mentioned cheese. That's great. Like just a little bit for your body to hold on to. But the other thing that, I think many of us know about ginger and avoiding spicy foods, and also being really careful about things that, like smells that set you off. So some people don't like the smell of eggs, or they don't like the smell of meat, or they don't like certain smells. So be cautious of those things. But what we're seeing, again, in sort of research and nutrition or nutrients that are really helping is actually vitamin B6. So very specific vitamin, but dosed in a specific way. So they're seeing about 25 milligrams every 8 hours, seems to improve nausea symptoms. So you'll notice in, different Diskim and Clicks, different pharmacies, they'll have some tablets that are anti-nausea, and often they're just a dose of vitamin B6, which you can also get from your food. So as a dietitian, my sort of approach is always food first where we can. So B6 is in things like chicken and pistachios and salmon and spinach. If you can get it in your food, great. But if you're really struggling with nausea, it's definitely worth a try to try that supplemental B6.
I actually, yes, in our session, you recommended it, and I found it was hugely impactful. I've heard all of the tips of, what you should have, the gingers, the this and the that. And I felt like when I had vitamin B6, I had an entirely different day. And so much so that I was telling friends who were experiencing really bad nausea and were also pregnant, I'd tell them, like, just ask your doctor or your gynae or whoever you're chatting to for medical advice, like ask him about B6, because I can't believe that no one that I know of was taking it. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's like this little miracle that was seriously helped me tremendously. And I didn't take it at the beginning. That's why I think I often reflect back on the nausea, which was so long. But when I did start taking it, I felt a massive difference.
Like that. And did you take just a supplemental form, or did you look for food sources as well?
I found it a little hard with the food sources, just because the snacks and the carbs that I was craving. By the time dinner came, I couldn't stomach like a full meal. And that's usually when I'd make like more of a wholesome chicken or salmon or whatever it may be that had vitamin B6. But so I went, I can't remember the brand it was, but it's exactly how you described it. It was in like a Diskim, and it promoted pregnancy nausea. So I took the supplements.
So glad it worked for you, because nausea is so, it's just so unpleasant. And it's like, it's part of many pregnancies, but it's not the fun part. If we can manage it in any way with any of these little tips and tricks, and some will work for some people and not for others. So ginger has been really effective in some moms, but in others, it's totally useless. Or if you don't enjoy ginger, then that's not really a very practical option. So it's good to know kind of all the little tips and tricks and find the one that hopefully helps with your particular day-to-day nausea. It's not bad.
And then when it comes to the prenatal vitamins, now more South African specific, what is usually sort of something that's not included in the prenatals that one should look at substituting with food? over and above the nutrients that you've mentioned for the first trimester?
So the nutrients that basically throughout pregnancy, what you're going to find is across the board, the multivitamins all have kind of a similar recipe, just in different amounts. So they will all include folic acid, which is the supplemental form of folate. They will almost all include iron. Iron, we haven't chatted yet about second trimester and third trimester, but iron becomes really important actually only later on in pregnancy, because your blood volume is increasing in the second trimester. Our blood volume increases by about 150%. So just that fact means that our body needs more iron. Interestingly, in the first trimester, we actually, our requirements decrease just a little bit because we've stopped menstruating. So we're not losing blood every month, and we haven't grown, our volume hasn't increased too much yet. So the first trimester, iron's not so important. It becomes especially important as we get into the second and third trimesters, but most prenatals will include the pregnancy requirement of iron for the whole pregnancy. So it's 27 milligrams a day is what we need in pregnancy. Pre-pregnancy, it's 18 milligrams a day. So it's a bit of a jump, but our body does really need it, particularly in the second and third trimesters. So they'll all include folic acid. They'll almost all include iron. They'll include many of the B vitamins, you know, even B6 in certain amounts. Most of them will include B12, really, really important for, actually works kind of in tandem with folate or folic acid. So most of them will cover the basis of the nutrients that are really required, just in differing amounts. So some of the nutrients that the prenatal multis might not cover is, the first one is choline. Very, very few of them do in South Africa. So choline is something that I almost always add on as a supplemental form, especially if mom's not into egg. The other one is omega-3. Some of our prenatal multi-packs, the blister pack includes an omega-3 supplement, which is great to see. You can absolutely meet your omega-3 requirements from your diet if you're eating fish, fatty fish, sort of 2 to 3 times a week. But that's actually quite hard for many of us. It's not that practical. So often if the prenatal multi that someone is on doesn't include that, it's something that I'll add in as an extra. Then the other one that I always check from a dietary perspective to see if they're maybe meeting it already from their diet is calcium. Calcium becomes, again, really important in the second trimester. So for babies, skeleton is developing and needs a lot of calcium. And biology is an amazing thing. What it'll do is, if you're not getting enough dietary calcium or calcium from your supplements, your body will actually draw on your bones and teeth to give to baby. So chances are baby will be fine, even if you don't have enough calcium in pregnancy. But you come out of pregnancy with, you know, not a severe deficiency, but a little bit, your stores have been depleted. And my feeling is, one of my biggest roles is to make sure mom comes out of pregnancy healthy and robust and not completely depleted, because going into that fourth trimester and having a newborn baby, you sort of need all the stores and energy you possibly can have. And if baby's zapped all that from you during pregnancy, I haven't done my job, is how I feel. So the ideal is to kind of really nurture yourself so that you're strong and you're not, you haven't, baby's taken what it needs, because baby will do that anyway, but you've been nourishing yourself in a way that it doesn't leave you depleted or deficient.
True. And another, I actually just thought of it now, I actually completely forgot about this, but just, which was quite something that I researched preconception and then first trimester, was caffeine and your sort of take on it. Because I know there's it's a controversial subject, because some, you know, say there's a certain quantity that you should be drinking. Some say you shouldn't be drinking it at all. What's your take on caffeine?
So it's a very controversial topic. And I think the sort of official guidelines across the board are no more than 200 milligrams of caffeine a day, which, for those of you who aren't familiar with how many milligrams are in what, so let's say just a flat white or a cappuccino has about 150 milligrams. And even a cup of tea will have about 40 milligrams. So one coffee and one tea, and you're just about there. So it's quite easy to exceed that, even if you are drinking a bit of caffeine. So it's important to be mindful of that. I think my approach to caffeine was really the less the better. And if you can avoid it, great. We know it crosses the placenta, so we know that it's reaching baby. So my encouragement was to, in sort of the preconception side, start lowering your caffeine intake so that in pregnancy it wasn't so hard. Decaf coffee is absolutely safe. There's different ways that they make decaf coffee, and that's one thing that you might want to read into a little bit if you are consuming a lot of decaf coffee, because there's a chemical process and there's sort of an oxygenates and process. There's different ways that they do it, but it's very accessible to find kind of a healthy decaf. And I think for a lot of us, and maybe I should only speak for myself, but it's the ceremony of having a cup of coffee that is so nice. So just replacing that with decaf, eventually you don't feel so sorry that you are missing that caffeine kick, because you're at least still part of that, you know, delicious cup of hot coffee. Yeah. So, yeah, I would say my recommendation would be to limit it as much as you can. And if it's something that you can sort of switch to decaf completely, even better. But don't be afraid of a cup of tea. Don't be afraid of a cup of coffee. Don't, you know, avoid the dessert with Kahlua. It's those little bits of caffeine aren't going to be a make or break. It's just what we're seeing in research is that it's not doing any good. It's not, you know, a baby building food. And we know that it does affect them. So we're kind of leaning towards less is better, if you can imagine.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know that it's very individual in terms of what the effect of caffeine has on you. I just know personally, I've done those DNA tests in the past. I know I'm quite sensitive to caffeine. So I preconception gave it up for a while. And like you said, it's that ceremony that I missed, but I replaced it with making red cappuccinos, like rooibos cappuccinos at home, or having decaf. And then in my second trimester, I started really wanting a bit of coffee, and we've got an espresso machine at home. So I started like putting, I don't know if it's even making any difference, but like less than a teaspoon of caffeinated coffee we've combined with my decaf. And I'm just aware that I get the sort of jitters from caffeine. So I've just made sure that if I, just for my own sanity, because when I gave it up for quite some time, it was really nice not having a stimulant and really seeing what my body wanted to do in terms of energy wise. Did I need a nap? Did I need to go to bed earlier? And obviously caffeine, if I have one cup of strong coffee, I'm like buzzing the entire day. So yeah, it was just interesting to see individually what impact it had on me, and then slowly like introducing it, but at the same time, just making sure that I don't ever consume it, that I'm feeling this rush, because that just makes me feel guiltier. If like you say, if it's passing through baby and it's making me feel this way, what's happening down there?
Sure. No, it's you don't want to ever have guilt, and that's something that I think is really important in pregnancy, is to sort of understand what you're doing impacts baby, but to not have guilt around it, because at the end of the day, your body is doing an incredible thing, and it will protect baby, and it will, you know, it's unbelievable the lengths it'll go to make sure baby gets what it needs, and to make sure that baby is as healthy as possible, often at mom's expense. But yeah, I think understanding what you're eating and understanding that it can impact a healthy baby, but in many ways is most important for making sure you stay healthy. A lot of these foods that we talk about in pregnancy affect baby a little bit, but actually it's, you know, about avoiding gestational diabetes or preventing preeclampsia. So all of these things have to do with mom's health, but mom's health is so linked, obviously, to baby that's got to be a focus. But rest assured sort of that your body will do everything it can to shuttle nutrients to baby. Like, I remember my sister was like, they're kind of like a parasite, and they will just take everything they need from you while they are you know, while they're inside of you. And even something as simple as standing up too quickly, blood flow first goes straight to baby. So you will feel lightheaded. But the priority and the focus is baby for that entire 9 months of pregnancy. And postpartum, actually, if we're honest. The focus is always baby from the moment you fall pregnant. So yeah, it's reassuring in some ways to know that your body will prioritize your blind day at your expense, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. And such is life for that's our lives basically cut out for us going forward.
Yeah.
Now that you've actually mentioned preeclampsia, just out of interest, is that something that you'll only sort of discover in your later third trimester? And if that is something that you're experiencing, how big of an impact can your diet and nutrients have in helping you if you are experiencing preeclampsia?
Great question. So it is often something that we pick up a little bit later, or that presents a little bit later, and it has sort of negative consequences for mom and for babe. Basically, it's extremely high blood pressure during pregnancy. And what we know from a dietary perspective is the biggest impact that dietary things have on our blood pressure is salt. So, I was raving about salt earlier, about how, you know, it's a great source of iodine. But it is something you've got to be quite cautious of. So it's something that is always worth understanding, you know, how much sodium is in different things. Typically, it's high in prepackaged goods. So any of those pre-made meals, but even restaurant meals, like salt and sugar, unfortunately, make everything so delicious. And so it makes us buy it again or come back to that restaurant or want more of it. So it's something that is hard to manage outside of home cooking and that we should all kind of have an understanding of. And what I try and teach anyone that will listen, but certainly anyone I work with, is how to read nutrition labels to see how much sodium is in different products, because you do have to be mindful of it. But we also add it to our cooking, we add it to our plate, we add it all over the show. So it's something that during pregnancy, for sure, to prevent preeclampsia, but actually just generally, we should all be mindful about our sodium intake and understanding where it's coming from in our diet is really helpful. And I think the biggest culprits are typically the prepackaged things. There's a lot of the way we preserve things is in salt. So, you know, things that are preserved in brine or pickled, for example, are really, really high in sodium. Not something you have to worry about, but, you know, from a day-to-day perspective, but you want to be mindful of it. And certainly if preeclampsia is something that you're diagnosed with, and it's definitely something you need to start managing.
Okay, well, that's interesting. My go-to in my head was that that would be sugar. I don't know why. I was just thinking that sugar would have such a big impact. I didn't actually even think of salt, and I'm such a lover of salt.
You love her salt. Mm. I mean, sugar also has a big impact on pregnancy. So I briefly mentioned gestational diabetes. So that's something also that can develop during pregnancy, and that has to do with basically carbohydrates as a general macronutrient. Is sugar falls underneath that kind of larger umbrella. But with gestational diabetes, you just really, really be careful with how many carbs you're consuming in at once, like the portions of carbs that you're having, because your body just no longer is responding to insulin the same way and able to manage your blood glucose quite the same. And sugar does play a role in sleep.
And then another question that I know you get a lot, and I'm like holding thumbs that I don't experience this anytime too soon. Maybe it is also something that is more prominent in a third trimester, and that is constipation. Any tips and nutritional advice when it comes to preventing or helping?
So that's something that I always talk about right from the very beginning of pregnancy, because it's something that's, A, it's so terribly uncomfortable. And B, it has a lot to do with, there's sort of a few reasons for it. So basically, one thing that I always check with clients is what supplements are on. So we've chatted a little bit about iron and how iron is really important. Supplemental form of iron often causes constipation. So I have some clients that are on a regular prenatal multivitamin for pregnancy, but they're constipated right from the beginning of their pregnancy because all of a sudden they're taking a supplement that has more iron than they've ever sort of consumed before, and it causes constipation right from the get-go. So that's the first thing to check is your supplement contributing a lot of iron to your intake that's causing the constipation? Because there are some supplements that have all sort of the other pregnancy nutrients that we definitely know and need, but without the iron. So the random sort of aside, but for someone who has hemochromatosis, for example, so that's basically your body can't respond to iron in quite the same way. It's actually iron overload. So they can't have any supplements with iron in them because their body is already in iron overload and it actually isn't processing it properly. So there are supplements that don't include iron. So that's the first thing to look at is, okay, let's see, what's your supplement doing? Is it baby contributing? But the three kind of lifestyle factors for constipation are diet, but specifically fiber. So insoluble fiber is actually what really helps with constipation. So think about skins of fruits and vegetables and beans and whole grains. These types of things really, really help with constipation. So you want to make sure you get enough fiber, insoluble fiber specifically. Hydration, hugely important. And basically during pregnancy, our fluid requirements increase because of a whole host of reasons. You're growing as a person, and the way we calculate fluid requirements is actually based on kilograms. So many milliliters per kilogram. And as I'm sure everyone knows, as you progress your pregnancy, you weigh a little bit more each day. So your fluid requirements rightfully increase. So by the time you're in your third trimester, I mean, the very minimum would be 2 liters a day, but most of us need about 3 liters of fluid a day. And that's actually quite a lot of fluid if you're not used to drinking that much. So that really adds into the sort of constipation equation. And then, so we've got fiber, we've got food, and the third thing is movement. And basically, as we progress through pregnancy, we become a little bit more awkward. It's more challenging to keep up daily movement. And inevitably, we're doing less exercise and less daily movement than we're used to. And that physical movement genuinely physically keep things moving in your digestive tract. So it's kind of this perfect storm of we need more fluid, but we're not getting it. We sort of slow down with our movement because it's just uncomfortable or we're hot or it's just physically more challenging. And then all the different hormones impact how quickly our gut moves. And now in third trimester, especially, you've got baby pressing sort of on your different parts of your digestive tract. So it is very, very common, but thankfully these different strategies of fiber, fluid, and movement really help with it. And then always check your prenatal to see if maybe the iron is also contributing. But yeah, typically you pick that up early on when you start that prenatal in your first trimester and you're like, oh, wait a second, something's slowed down a little bit. So just nice to know those kind of things to look out for.
Yeah, that's a biggie. I even, you know, the saying, when you know better, you do better. I feel like that implies to a lot of things in my life, but not to pregnancy, because I know how important water intake is. And pre-pregnancy used to be really good at it mainly because I exercise a lot. So when going for a run or, you know, doing sort of a strength session afterwards, I'd naturally drink a lot of water. And because I'm not hitting those endorphin highs and putting so much strain on my body, I'm not really focused on drinking as much water, more focused on eating. So I have gotten right, though. I try with the water intake, and I have to like try and be creative with adding lime or lemon or something to get myself to drink it. But on the fiber front, I do notice a massive difference when I'm eating my oats in the morning and adding a bit of psyllium husk and chia seeds, and I'm having enough water that day. I know I, you know, set for good bowel movements. And then, like yesterday was a typical day. I'm quite sensitive, I'd say, to sugar, or I'm very aware of the impact on sugar, whether it's just in my mind or not, what it has on my metabolism and how it slows things down. And yesterday, I just had one of those snacky days where it was definitely high sodium in the types of snacks that I was grabbing. And two of my absolute favorites, Beacon Easter eggs. And immediately, because of course, being pregnant and having a slow metabolism already, immediately, like today, I'm suffering from yesterday, not having my high fiber intake and enough water.
No, I mean, I remember feeling that, like, pregnancy is an amazing time to get in touch with yourself and your body and really understand it and, like, tune in. Even some of these cravings that we have or aversions that are so common in pregnancy actually are our bodies doing what they need to protect baby or to get baby what it needs. So, for example, I'm sure many moms have heard of or maybe even experienced the craving to eat clay or eat ice. This is typically an iron deficiency. Or a lot of moms crave ice cream or dairy, milk. And that often in the first trimester is actually because of an iodine deficiency. So iodine is in all dairy products. So all these things that our body's doing, some moms all of a sudden can't stand the smell of coffee. And they were coffee drinkers before, but now they just don't even like the smell of it or the taste of alcohol. That actually happened to me. I didn't know I was pregnant, and I was visiting family in Canada, and my dad poured me a glass of wine, and it was like, oh, very nice wine. And I was like, well, maybe I've lived in South Africa for too long, and I'm like a wine snob now, and it's just bad wine. But I genuinely think now that I was pregnant, and my body was like, no, 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 put that down. We don't like that. So it's amazing what your body is doing. And I think the intuition that's developing, you know, they talk about the intuition you'll have for your baby. And I can say without hesitation that I very much feel that my intuition for my little one is so strong. And I think that starts in pregnancy. I think it's like you're already tuning in to what you need and what baby needs right from the moment you fall pregnant, which is like quite a special thing, quite an amazing sort of wake up call to have that connection with this little babe on the way.
Like a little superpower that we are gifted amongst all the strenuous hurdles we have to face.
Totally, totally. And tap into that, listen to it, because it's really, you know, it's there for a reason, and I think it tells us some really important things.
And then when it comes to just supplements that we should maybe look at avoiding during pregnancy, I know you and I in our session also spoke about protein powders. And is that something that's really necessary during your pregnancy, or is it getting enough protein from foods enough? And then also probiotics and the role that plays.
Sure. Okay. So I think the important thing to remember is that our body absorbs things better from food. So food first is always my sort of encouragement to everyone, that our body actually prefers to get things from whole sources, not sort of prepackaged things or supplements. It really can absorb the natural form of nutrients better from foods rather than the supplemental version. So when it comes to things like protein powders, they absolutely have a place in especially like the sports nutrition world or general health and healing, and the average day to day, because they're often really, really helpful kind of quick life hack to quickly get a protein powder in a smoothie, for example, or your oats for breakfast, just to bulk up a little bit. The tricky thing, I suppose not the tricky thing, but the thing to remember is your protein requirements aren't huge during pregnancy. Until you get to the third trimester, they increase a little bit because baby's growing so quickly. But it's quite easy to meet it from your food alone. So, you know, just having sort of 2 to 3 servings of protein foods a day, whether that be eggs or tofu or meat or cheese, eating protein from your diet, it's actually quite easy to meet your protein requirements. Because I think what a lot of people don't know is that protein is in many, many foods. There's protein in many grains. It's not just meat and beans. So it's not actually that challenging to meet your requirements. And what you have to be careful of is anytime you are adding in a supplement, whether that be a protein powder or a shake, you just want to be really mindful of what else you're putting in that product. Unfortunately, the supplements industry isn't overly well regulated. So it's just one of those things where when you buy it, you really want to be checking the ingredients and making sure they're not adding in artificial sweeteners or adding in, you know, any sort of foods or nutrients in high amounts that aren't helpful for baby. So my sort of recommendation whenever I work with someone who really loves protein powders is to look at where else they're getting protein in their diet. If they're meeting their requirements already, then it's not really necessary to overdo it. And it can be challenging on your kidneys and so on. You don't need so much protein to really be overdoing it. And as you've experienced in pregnancy, even if you're a really active person, that sort of slows down a little bit, you know, especially as you get bigger and a little bit more awkward. So yes, your protein requirements increase. You know, they're sort of, in the first trimester, it's 1.2 grams per kilogram. So that's how we usually calculate protein. By the third trimester, it's 1.5 grams per kilogram. So it's increased a little bit. So if you're, say, 74, or if you're 70 kilograms, you actually only need 84 grams of protein for your whole day. And by the third trimester, okay, that jumps up to 105 grams. But it's not an extreme amount of protein that you need to supplement protein powder with, unless for some reason you're not meeting it with things like, you know, beans, meats, cheeses, etc.
Okay. And then probiotics?
So probiotics, it's another great example of when I really, really encourage everyone to do a food-first approach. So things like yogurt and kefir and sauerkraut, those types of things are food-based sources of probiotics. What we're seeing, I think what's important to understand is if, because I follow a lot of research, like I work in research and I'm like a bit of a science nerd, and basically there's a lot of research coming out, especially in the fertility space, but also in the pregnancy space. What's important to know, though, is that it's quite challenging to study pregnant women in sort of like the gold standard kind of way for obvious ethical reasons. You can't think like, ooh, we think that probiotics are harmful, so we're going to give you, 50 of you, probiotics, and we think of that, and we're not going to give them to the other 50% of the study population. It's just not ethical. And the stakes are so high of you know, testing out these things on a pregnant woman. So a lot of the studies that we're seeing, they're not studied quite the same way that we would do in kind of like a randomized control trial setup. But what we're seeing so far is that there's maybe a link between probiotics and preeclampsia. So what I have sort of interpreted that as is pregnancy isn't the greatest time to necessarily have a probiotic supplement, but it's still an amazing time to include probiotic rich food. So the other thing to know about probiotics is basically the supplement specifically, so whether it's a capsule or in a powdered form or in a liquid form, we know that they're doing positive things for our microbiome and that we need probiotics, but you can actually disrupt your own microbiome by overdoing it. So there is such thing as too much of a good thing. And some probiotics will totally put your microbiome kind of out of balance, and you will feel, you know, the gastrointestinal side effects almost right away. Some of them you won't notice, and hopefully it's just sort of doing what it needs to do. But almost across the board, pregnancy is like not necessarily the time you want to be experimenting with, you know, radical shifts in your dietary habits and extra supplements here and there. So my feeling is, unless probiotics are, you know, something you've been consuming for a long time, and you have no risk of preeclampsia, and you find it really helps with your microbiome. It's definitely not something you need to add in, and it's something that you want to understand and be cautious of, because it will impact potentially, based on a bit of research, your risk for preeclampsia.
Okay, that's interesting. And then to end off, while we're on that note of talking about foods and things to be more cautious of, is there anything that you sort of recommend as an absolute no-no when it comes to foods you should be avoiding? I know when we had our session, I was really fascinated by the fact that one should be more cautious about herbal teas. That was one that I was particularly... didn't even cross my mind. And so, yeah, if there's anything along those lines of herbal teas, I know we've spoken about artificial sugars, anything that you recommend avoiding?
Okay, so the biggest no-no, which hopefully is really obvious to everyone, is alcohol. So alcohol, really not a win in pregnancy. So artificial sweeteners, you touched on, basically, they're not toxic, but they're not, you know, baby-building ingredients. So it's not something that I would be frightened of, but it's something that I would avoid if I could. And there's some that are better than others. So, for example, sugar alcohol, so xylitol and erythritol, those are slightly better than, say, the aspartame and sucralose. Stevia also a little bit better. But if you can, I always encourage clients to sort of indulge in the real thing. Dates, maple syrup, coconut sugar, these things that are naturally sweet, but aren't sort of an artificial form. So artificial sweeteners is something to be mindful of for sure. And just make sure you're not consuming in excess. It kind of links back to the microbiome. It disrupts your microbiome. So that's, again, it's not the time to be experimenting with that kind of thing. And sort of what we're learning is baby's microbiome is going to imprint on yours, and also the way you deliver also impacts their microbiome. So we're learning lots about babies' microbiome. But one thing we do know is that artificial sweeteners are not beneficial for our microbiome. So that's quite important. And then herbal teas, basically, again, as I explained, it's really hard to study these things. And you will have heard different teas help with this, or help, you know, encourage labor, that sort of thing. So many of you will have heard of red raspberry leaf tea, often something that women take at the end of pregnancy because it sort of stimulates uterine contractions and apparently reduces the duration of labor. Very little bit of research on that, not a ton, but it's there. So red raspberry leaf tea often is encouraged at the end of pregnancy, not the beginning. Some of the teas... basically, we just don't know enough. So they will have really, really high antioxidant properties. And even something like rooibos has polyphenols and great antioxidant properties. But we don't know the impact that those high doses have on babies. So what I generally suggest is enjoy the teas that you do enjoy. There are a few that you want to be more mindful of because we just don't know enough. So hibiscus tea is one of them. But things like chamomile, rooibos, just don't overdo it. So I always encourage clients to sort of have 2 cups a day because we know that's safe, but to not have it be your only fluid intake, because there are some of these teas, like herbs, plants actually have so much healing power, which is incredible because they are high in antioxidants and polyphenols and so on. Sometimes it's so high. So, for example, turmeric. This is more a preconception nutrient. But what we've seen is turmeric, we've learned, is super anti-inflammatory and was sort of really hailed as this hero spice or herb, and it truly is. But we were taking so much of it and taking it in capsule form, and then we actually were seeing negative impacts on fertility outcomes. So basically, moderation is really important with any of these things. And just be mindful that plants do have, you know, incredible healing properties, but can overdo things, especially when we start in concentrated forms of it or drinking excessive amounts, because We've heard it reduces labor, so we're now drinking red raspberry leaf tea exclusively.
Yeah. I actually, with your advice, especially with the artificial sugars, looking more into it, my first trimester go-to as well was Coke Zero. And of course, that's got aspartame in it, right? So after we had a session, I was like, oh, I really am overdoing it, because I went back to, you know, when you're feeling really nauseous, having flat Coke and toast and Bovril sort of vibe. I had that. And so after our session, I was like, I started going back to introducing a lot more dates, maple syrup, honey, all of that, to try and just take down the artificial sugars that I was consuming.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sort of makes sense. Like if we just dial it back a bit, obviously our body prefers real food. So all of these processed foods or, you know, big brands or artificial ingredients aren't the real food that our body craves and knows what to do with. So the more natural sort of whole food approach you can take, the better your body can absorb the nutrients and sort of the healthier you'll feel.
Yeah, completely. Well, thank you so much. That was a lot of useful info and tips that you've shared. And I'm sure if anyone listening needs any more sort of assistance, they'll definitely get in touch with you. And even like I told you before, how I got to booking a session with you is I followed you for quite some time on Instagram, and your information and content that you were putting out there was incredibly valuable from a preconception point of view. So I'll definitely include all of your links so that your resources are out there.
Perfect. That was lovely chatting. Thanks for today. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, really happy to know that what I'm putting out there is helpful, because I mean, I do feel like we all deserve to know this information. And it's what I think I love most about what I do for work, is that what I'm sharing impacts mom, which directly impacts baby, but I think kind of like spreads their ripples a little bit farther than that. So it's nice to kind of feel that what we are doing in pregnancy can really make an impact on our health, but actually set up baby for, you know, the best possible start they can have, which is so important. And I think it's all we want to do as moms is, you know, give the best we can to our bubs or our babes to be with the babes on the way. So
exactly. Having it impact on the next generation. That's quite a big role you have there.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you fast forward that far, but yeah, for now it's just nice to kind of work with, you know, moms that are keen to learn and do the best for their babe. It's really always inspiring.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, and we'll definitely chat soon.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Bye.